Blog Talk Radio.
Time. And once again, we bring you the analysis and anatomy of oppression, which also requires an anatomy of colonialism. And the anatomy of colonialism is merely a description of the connections that we have which relate to economics, jobs, education, housing, etc. Jim Crow is not dead but alive and growing by the minute. The question is, do we have the emotional capacity to deal with this reality? Tonight's subjects will cover the impact of the University of Missouri strike, which fired the reactionary administration, the unity of the black bourgeoisie with the black athlete, a.k.a. the boys in the hood. The second topic will be the attack in France. Chickens come home to roost for European imperialism. And as usual, we will have an update on our political prisoners and America's germ warfare, hepatitis C, against the prisoners in our death camps. And finally, hopefully, we will be discussing the concepts of human nature and current events. Without further ado, I, Betty Davis, will turn our microphone over to our brother, Ralph Pointer. Ralph Pointer, what's happening?
How you doing out there in computer land? We will begin with what I believe. The overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our laborers for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, move lynching indoors. The police as the army of occupation, taking lynching outside again. The lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. And because the lives of our heroes and sheroes who once protected us in our community do not matter to us, the people, our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds, as well as the minds of others. Wake up. Now is the time. Brothers and sisters, now that you've heard the topics we would like to discuss, we're only going to be on for an hour this evening. And so I'm going to limit myself. But I would like to say that listening to the mayor's announcement that the police at embassies and other sensitive sites are being issued more powerful weapons. How is it that this announcement doesn't comfort me? And I go forward to say, well, again, we see in this whole issue of what's happening today, the ugly head of states' rights adds, you know, rises up again. And we know what the states' rights struggle for the southern states was all about. That was the right to deny black people voting rights or any other rights, legal rights, et cetera. And so now they're using this immigration of Syrians to raise the issue of states' rights once again. And so now back to the what we had started as our subject, and everybody has to recognize that the imperial world, and I call it the imperial world, that is the European Union, etc., has shown its teeth again. And when Obama correctly states that the U.S. has always stood shoulder to shoulder with the French, and we go way back to General Lafayette and General George Washington, who sent his personal money to slaveholders in Haiti to help the slaveholders fight the liberation struggle against the slaves. Haiti, slavery, the understanding, shoulder to shoulder with the French, who had many of the slaveholders in Haiti were French. They supported, U.S. stood shoulder to shoulder with the United States in supporting the Vietnamese struggle. And I don't believe that there is anybody today, anywhere, who does not understand that the struggle of the Vietnamese people for liberation was just that. They threatened no one but the imperial corporations that wanted to take their resources from them, to take the land from them, to enslave them. And so we see that where America is and always has been. And we see presently the United States, France, and Canada are together in maintaining the slave colony of Haiti. And let's remember, it's nothing more than a slave colony. And these powers have extracted reparations from Haiti from winning their struggle. And the U.S. is shoulder to shoulder with the French and the Canadians on there. Remember Aristide, who received over 70% of the vote, was taken out of Haiti by the U.S. Marines at bayonet point. And so the Americans who supported every dictator, Baby Doc, Papa Doc, and everybody else in Haiti and countries around the world keeping the people down, support every dictator who opposes democracy. And as Chavez from Venezuela said, the American people are tolerating the dictatorship of the two-party system. And so, without continuing, let us go on to what's happening in Syria today. We see, and this is the one that, you know, I heard a commentator say, why there's ISIS. And he said, the ISIS comes out of humiliation of the people, frustration of the people, marginalization of the people, military intervention by an outside source, lack of good governance, that is, an outside power supports corruption, and the underestimation of what revolution is possible, what it is about, and a social media, corporate media. And if you think of all of those things, if you think of all of those things, you have to ask yourself, what is different in America as it deals with our population of color here. Humiliation, frustration, marginalization, military intervention, and I talk about the army of occupation in our communities, lack of good governance. I talk about our colonial administrators who call themselves politicians, total corruption, and we hear over and over again, we can't fight these people, we're not enough, you know, like we don't have enough resources, and the social media that supports that. And so without that, we all have to remember that we are here to talk about our political prisoners, those who supported us. And so I've been signaled that I have used up more than my time, and so I'm going to switch instantly to Lynn Stewart, who's going to talk, give us a little something on our political prisoners. Lynn, are you there?
Hello, Ralph. Yes, and hello, everybody out there in, I guess we call it, blog land. Happy to be back this week. I just want to say Ann Lamb of the New York City Jericho chapter is probably not going to be with us tonight because she is heading up a meeting about the dire situation of Seth Hayes, who has now been taken to the Albany Medical Center. He is one of the political prisoners who has been in the longest. He has had a number of complaints. And when I say that, I mean that in the soft sense, because these are things that if they were happening to one of our loved ones, we would know these are serious matters indeed. And when the Department of Correction in New York State moves a prisoner to a hospital setting, you know that it is serious indeed. So we should keep up with the calls to the doctors that Ann has suggested, and all you have to do is go to the New York City Jericho website to get that information.
Can I interrupt you at that moment, Lynn?
Yes.
I'd like to interrupt you to read an update sent from Ann Lamb of Jericho on Seth Hayes. It's about two sentences. On Sunday, November 15th, when Seth went to a medical in the morning, he was taken out to Sullivan. He was apparently taken to Albany Medical Center, but the facility never called Sheila to inform her of this. It is extremely urgent that the people make these phone calls to Dr. Koningsman's office and to Lancy Ling, Lyng. Dr. Koningsman's number is, as this thing just died out, Dr. Koningsman's number is...
I don't have it either, Ralph, but it is on the...
I have it, 518-457-7073. That's a phone, and 518-445-7553, fax. Nancy Ling's number is 518-445-6176. And on Saturday, November 7th, Jericho received a call from Ori Lumumba regarding Seth Hayes.
Okay,
number...
I think that's old news now, Ralph. The 7th is a week ago. So we know he's in Albany Medical Center. So our previous calls, I made at least three of them to the Sullivan Correctional Center, have done some good, and we just have to keep monitoring and keep the pressure on them. So please do call Dr. Koningsberg and Dr. Ling for Seth. And, of course, I'm sure you're all aware of Albert Woodfox and that the circuit court in the Fifth Circuit, which is the lynching circuit that covers Texas, Louisiana, have now ruled once again against Albert and have ordered a third trial. This may be the case that goes to the Supreme Court because part of the lower court ruling said he could not receive a fair trial because of his conditions of incarceration, which is solitary confinement for the last 40 years. So let's keep an eye. Once again, it seems like we repeat ourselves over and over again, but it's all we have. It's all we can do right now. Keep your hopes and prayers, if you pray, for Alfred Woodfox, who has been too long in jail too long in a solitary box in Angola, Louisiana. And in closing, I just want to read a short poem. This was sent to Carol Seligman, who is a wonderful California comrade who publishes Socialism Now, a magazine, and who also is an aide-de-camp at the Prison Radio. And she received this through Prison Radio for Rashid, who is a fine penman. When I say that, I mean he draws like an angel. And he is incarcerated somewhere in the Great Gulag of Texas. About Eric Garner, who many of your listeners, Ralph, our listeners, are very familiar with his situation on Staten Island. And I just wanted to read it. It's very touching. It's very short. It's from a poem called Split This Rock. And it's by Ross Gay, who is a teacher living in Bloomington, Indiana. His book, Catalog of Unabashed Gratitude, is available from the University of Pittsburgh. At any rate, this poem, Split This Rock. A small needful fact is that Eric Garner worked for some time for the Parks and Rec Horticultural Department, which means perhaps that with his very large hands, perhaps in all likelihood he put gently into the earth some plants which most likely, some of them, in all likelihood, continue to grow, continue to do what such plants do, like house and feed small and necessary creatures, like being pleasant to touch and smell, like converting sunlight into food, like making it easier for us to breathe. Don't forget the rallying cry for Eric Garner was, he needed to breathe. Let us all breathe deeply and commit ourselves once again to rescuing all the souls who struggled and who are now in the clutches of the government. Bring home all the political prisoners. As Chairman Fred likes to say, bring them all home. Bring them home now. Thank you, Ralph.
Okay, thank you so much for that, Lynn. And so let us move on to the discussion we had last week, or let's pick it up from there. And I'd like to quote Helen Keller on the contentious discussion we had last week from the pen of Helen Keller. When one comes to think of it, there are no such things as divine, immutable, or inalienable rights. Rights are things we get when we are strong enough to make good our claim on them. Rights are things we get when we are strong enough to make good our claim on them. So let us, you know, we are an organization of theory, we are an organization of practical actions to make our theories real. Now, we must understand the way things happen, and we also must understand a statement of Helen Keller's, which is when we are strong enough to make real our claim on them. All righty, let us continue. Betty?
All right, we want to acknowledge and, pardon me, give a shout-out to our panel this evening, Brother Larry Pinckney, Brother Tom Syracuse, Brother Joel Myers, Sister Lynn, and Sister Mary Neal. We want to acknowledge and welcome all of you to the mic, and thank you for being on board with us this evening. I guess we'll start off by calling Brother Larry Pinckney, and as you know, we've got a plethora of topics as usual. We're dealing with the signs of unity of the black bourgeoisie and the black athletes at the University of Missouri. We're dealing with the attack in France. Chickens come home to roost, our political prisoners, and this whole concept of what rights you have. And remember, our broadcast is shortened this evening. So, Brother Larry, would you like to start off with us this evening?
Thank you very much, my sister. I am going to, first and foremost, I'm going to always try to be succinct. First and foremost, I want to thank the audience, thank you, Sister Betty Davis, you, Brother Ralph Pointer, and, of course, our beloved sister, Sister Lynn Stewart. Now, having said that, I want to also say something else. Thank you, Betty, Sister Betty, for having made last week's program a success. You made it a success. Thank you very much for stepping up on behalf of all of us. Now, it is important to understand that the reality that we face is a reality of oppression. It is not only oppression, it is not osmosis, but it is systemic, worldwide, global oppression. In the United States of America, we constantly deal with the ongoing heritage, if you will, of this slavery and oppression, the genocide of the indigenous native peoples, the horrible slavery of black people, and even the system, if you will, of poor white people. We must understand that nothing has really changed. I repeat, has changed. What has happened is it has been tweaked. It has been tweaked. So, as Brother Ralph Pointer has said many times, black lives will only matter when they matter to black people collectively, all of us. And not only black people, but all people, black, white, brown, red, and yellow. Because if black lives do not matter, then no lives matter. With respect to Paris, and I'm talking fast, I apologize, but other people need to get on. With respect to the horrible attacks in Paris, and by the way, it wasn't just Paris. Let us understand that it has been confirmed that 224 people on the Russian Metrojet airliner were also murdered. Let us understand that there were dozens and dozens of people murdered in Beirut, Lebanon. Let us understand, I mean, I can go on and on. It's an endless list, as Gil Scott-Heron said, that won't be missed. Let us understand that Mr. Hope and Change Barack Obama and his close terrorist ally of Saudi Arabia and Qatar, etc., are funding these attacks. And these attacks against people all over the world, in Africa, as with the decapitation of Libya in North Africa, Somalia, the list goes on, are carried out by none other than the poster child, Barack Obama, who is going on 8 years in office as the bloodsucker of the U.S. empire. Let us understand that if we do not speak up for our political prisoners, and there are too numerous to even begin to delineate, let us understand that if we do not speak up for our political prisoners, then we are not speaking up for ourselves as human beings. I believe we are human. I believe, as my brother in Chicago said before he was assassinated, I am a revolutionary. Black, white, brown, red, and yellow. Fred Hampton, I am a revolutionary. We are still revolutionaries. We will not be relegated to the dustbin of history. Rather, It is those reactionary, racist, lying, blood-sucking, let me stop using adjectives, it is those demons who will be relegated to history. And who will do it? We will do it. As we said in the Black Panther Party, all power to the people. Black, white, brown, red, and yellow. Black lives matter? Well, let's make sure they matter. Let's make sure that we understand that our political prisoners must be supported, defended, and constantly referred to and talked about. No politician anywhere in this nation must ever, ever get any office, gain any office without coming out loud and clear, emphatically and repeatedly saying, I support political prisoners of this nation, the United States of America. Free our prisoners. Free them all. Black, white, brown, red, and yellow. Thank you. I'll end now. All power to the people.
Thank you so much for that, Larry. And last week, you were tremendous. We are able to pull these conversations up and play them on other programs. And like I say, thanks again. We can always count on you for an analytical, very clear positions on the struggles that we are having. But what troubles me is the effect that the corporate media has on the people. And I say, how can people forget so quickly what America did to the Vietnamese? More bombs dropped on them, a higher amount of explosives dropped on them than all the explosives put together of World War II. And with the lame excuse that they were communist. And it's just amazing. How many names do we have up for Vietnamese? None. How many flags went at half-mast for the Vietnamese? In this country, none. But then, how can we be surprised? I think of the American soldiers who were misguided and lied to about what Vietnam was all about. When they came home, their hospital ratings of the Veterans Hospital went down. And why? Because nobody took care of them. And today we see an America that is appealing to the American people to contribute to wounded warriors like they don't have any money to do it. And the American people are not upset about that. The hedge funds continue. The hedge fund managers make trillions. Corporations make billions. They send their, put their money offshore and get away with it. And it doesn't seem that the American people are angry about that. This is what amazes me. Not what the oppressor does, because the oppressor oppresses. What amazes me is what the people who talk about avoiding and fighting oppression are not doing. I'll end there for a moment. Tom, are you there with us? Tom Syracuse, Green Party, New York.
Yes, I am.
Are
you
there?
Thank you very much, Brother Ralph, and greetings to Sister Lynn and Sister Betty for giving me a chance to say a few words on this wonderful program. You mentioned, Brother Ralph, that you don't understand how the American people don't remember what happened in Vietnam. Well, the sad fact is that it's not that they don't remember. They never understood it. And that's been the case in our entire history. The American people never understood what the European settlers first did when they came to America. They never understood the genocide of the Native Americans. They never understood slavery. A good example of that would be the way Hollywood depicted slavery. First with Birth of a Nation, the way that was depicted. Then we get Gone with the Wind. So the American people have been successfully brainwashed into not understanding our history and not understanding what America is all about. And so when something happens, by the way, this isn't only true with the American people. It's true of any country that is based upon capitalism. That's the root of the problem. A system that in which a small elite puts its power and its profits ahead of everyone else. It's not only that black lives don't matter, they never mattered, and they will never matter as long as there's a capitalist system in place. Nobody lives matter except the elite. So that's the sad fact of it. And you wonder, well, how come more people don't realize this? Well, Frantz Fanon wrote a wonderful book. You know, and the title escapes me. Do you remember the name of that book?
Wretched of the Earth.
Wretched of the Earth. That's it. So what he pointed out was that those people, the people who are oppressed, the people who are colonized, they were actually made to believe that they were inferior, that they deserved to be oppressed, and that their oppressors were superior, and that's the way things were. And the only way that they could improve their lives is to take on the customs and attitudes of the oppressor. And that's what has happened with in all of these countries that have these puppet regimes, including the United States. I mean, can you get any better example than Barack Obama and all of these phony politicians of color? So that's where we are. Now, in 9/11, Ward Churchill, when he said this whole thing boils down to blowback, and what was the attitude of the mass media and the power structure in this country to demonize him? If I'm not mistaken, I think he lost his job at the college where he taught. Is that true?
Yes, at the University of Colorado, where he was head of the department, in spite of the fact that he published 25 books, and he is the father. He has written the Bible of the COINTELPRO. And so they took his, not only took his chairmanship of the department, they fired him. But guess what? He won his case in court. But in Colorado, the judge can overturn the decision of the jury. And while we were there, you know, to continue with your analysis of the black colonial administrators who dare call themselves politicians, I hope I'm still on, who call themselves politicians, when we first went and sat as the trial was being held, and I tried to assess the situation, and so I said to Ward, well, I think we got a good jury, but look out for that Negro judge. And I meant every word of it. Look out for that Negro judge. And after he won his case, the judge overturned the jury, and he is still fired. But excuse me. Go ahead, Tom.
And so so we have a similar situation here where we are being attacked by groups from the Middle East. And what is this? This is the same thing. It's nothing more than blowback. Now, if anybody should happen to say that in the mass media, or they will face such an opposition that if they hold any job that they can be fired from, they will be fired. And so, what is this all about? The fact of the matter is, capitalism cannot exist without imperialism. And imperialism operates on many levels. There's foreign imperialism that was practiced especially by the Europeans of the 19th century. Now the imperialism overseas is a little more sophisticated. We don't have direct rule over these countries. We have the puppets in there. And if one of these countries dares not to be a puppet, like Gaddafi or Saddam Hussein or Assad, yes, these people are dictators, but that's beside the point. They were not complete puppets of the United States. So that once the Soviet Union collapsed, the neocons here in this country decided, now we can do whatever we want to do. We will get rid of these people who refuse to be our puppets. We will get rid of Gaddafi. We will get rid of Saddam Hussein. We're gonna get rid of Assad. We're gonna get rid of the regime in Yemen. We're gonna get rid of whoever was trying to rule Somalia. We're gonna get rid of the Taliban in Afghanistan. And even if it means the total destruction and the killing of hundreds of thousands of people, so be it. Well, we're getting blowback. You know, I'm supposed to go up to visit my sister's family. I do this every year. They live in Connecticut. And in order to get up there, I go to Grand Central Station and get a train to go up there. Now, I don't know when the last time you were in Grand Central Station or at the Port of Authority or at Penn Station, but those places are prime targets. What is our government doing about it? Full of soldiers with machine guns. And yet, it is impossible to search everybody coming in and out of there. They know that. In fact, they don't search anybody. So what's going to stop anybody from going in there and blowing the place up, including the soldiers that are standing around? What's the purpose of having those soldiers? Not to protect the people that are trying to travel, but here again, to brainwash them into thinking that we have a government that's trying to protect us, and that we have a government that is going to bomb Syria even more than it had been, as a means of protecting us. That's nothing more than a lie. The more we bomb, the more hatred we're going to incur, the more fanaticism we're going to have, and the more attacks. This is a war. Does anybody really expect that in a war, one side can go to, can bomb and destroy whole countries to cause the worst refugee problem since World War II, when millions of people in desperation are leaving these countries without any blowback? Oh, come on. And yet, what I just said is never even touched by any of these reporters on the mass media or any of the journalists that are supposed to be asking these candidates questions. The whole thing is a sham. That's it.
Well, thank you so much, Tom. And on the blowback issue, one of the things I've said over and over again is the French colonials in these countries where France was an imperial power were told when the French took over that country in Algeria and the other countries, they were very prominent in controlling their economics. They told the people they were French citizens. And then when the people go to France, people of color, they find out they are not French citizens. And when we
can I just interject for 1 second and say to you, let us remember the Battle of Dien Bien French did, long before even the Americans came in. Dien Bien Phu, let us remember that. It is blowback. It's all about blowback. Just wanted to mention that. I'm sorry.
No, that's quite all right. That you know, Dien Bien Phu was one of the things, Dien Bien Phu was one of those things that showed total racism. And I'm saying, who in the world would go in the valley floor and say they're going to defend something when somebody could almost throw a stone on them? And because they had contempt for the Vietnamese strategists and the soldiers. Dien Bien Phu, blowback has been coming, but the American people have not learned much from their experiences. And to move forward again, when these people were told they were French citizens, they believed it, and then they went to France and then found out they weren't citizens. Well, you know, you can't lie to people forever and expect them to love you. And
Ralph,
yes.
This is Lynn just cutting in again because I think it's important. People should know on the Internet there is a circulating on Facebook at any rate a list of approximately, it looks like at least 500 places which the French have invaded over the years. And we're talking, sometimes it's just an invasion that's part of an Allied thing, but over and over, there they are in Southeast Asia, in Africa, in parts of the New World, we might say. We can never remember the French-Canadian experience, but they have been all over the world as imperial powers for a very, very long time.
And recently...
this is Tommy, and I just want to make one observation that Ralph brought out before about the way our soldiers were treated when they came back from Vietnam, the way they are being treated now when they're coming back from the Middle East. They have no place to live. They're getting very, very inadequate medical attention. And the insult of all insults to these soldiers is that they are not called soldiers. They are not called human beings. They are called boots.
That's right.
As if there were no human being inside these boots. And all of our politicians from the president down refers to them as boots on the ground. We have to have more boots on the ground. What an insult.
Well said, Tom. I can't add to that. Continue there. Joe, are you with us? Joe?
Yes, hello.
Do you have any comments on what we've been discussing?
Well, I wanted to start out with one thing listening to the discussion, that we should remember the French had colonized Vietnam for many, many years, and during World War II, the United States stepped in there with its own interests, and they promised the French that they would restore French control of Vietnam after the war. And at the same time, they promised Vietnam would be independent if they fought against the Japanese. So they made these two duplicitous, contradictory promises to the French imperialists and to the Vietnamese people led by Ho Chi Minh, one of the unequaled fighters for the oppressed in the world. And when the French were being defeated at the Dien Bien Phu, 1954 that was, the Richard Nixon, who was vice president of the United States at that time, was sent over to Vietnam to help out the French military, and he told them that if they wanted it, that the United States would use atomic bombs against the Vietnamese people that had the French surrounded in Dien Bien Phu. And there was some narrow decision that the French made not to take up the offer, and they decided to surrender. But people should be aware of the role of the United States in that, which in a certain way, even though at that time they were not yet directly in Vietnam with their troops, that they were promising to use the atomic bomb against the Vietnamese people. And then they war ended with the French, supposedly with a promise that that the country would be divided. And 2 years later, in 1956, there was supposed to be an election to reunite the country. But the Eisenhower administration, they said, oh, wait a minute. If we had an election in Vietnam, Ho Chi Minh and the liberation forces would win. Therefore, they canceled the election. And that's what led to, at that time, the longest war in United States history and the death of between 2 and 4 million Vietnamese. We only hear about the 58,000 American victims of that same war who were sent into the Vietnamese meat grinder to try to use force to prevent Vietnam from becoming truly independent and united. So very often that role of the possible nuclear support to the French imperialists by the United States is not that well known. Now, I want to say about what a lot of the news you turn on, it's nothing but what happened in Paris 24 hours a day. That's what the news-oriented stations are talking about, nothing else. And I want to say that we have to be aware of how little we know about the details of what happened there, because all the news that we get are from media, which is out to deceive us and lie to us and manipulate us. For example, they claim that ISIS or ISIL or Daesh, whatever name it goes by, that these are the people who pulled off this attack. Now, do we know who actually pulled off this attack? All we know is what we hear from sources that we cannot trust, that are trying to manipulate us. So they tell us, ISIS did this. This is a terrible thing. And we don't even know really who did it. We don't really know who ISIS actually is. It's a mysterious force which has a name, but very little else we know, because all that we know, again, is coming from this media. And now they seem to have come to a consensus after what happened in France. They're telling us, since ISIS did this, the French are going to go into Syria to fight against ISIS, we're told. Now, we know that they created a force that ISIS is supposed to be a part of, and this force was created to bring down the Syrian government in the first place. I mean, that's what ISIS was built up for, And then I think after going after Assad in Syria, they were going to turn them and use them against Iran, which of which Assad is supposed to be an ally. But now they want us to go into Syria on the pretext of fighting this force that they created in the first place. And I'm sure we'd be going, if the U.S. goes in there, or the French, that they are not going to be fighting ISIS. They're going to be fighting the oppressed people of Syria. And they'll be fighting against the Assad government. They'll be fighting against ISIS. They'll be fighting against both sides because they want to have more or less the rule of the imperialists rather than anyone in Syria to rule the country, to rule the Middle East. And let's not forget that they are also working directly hand-in-hand with the Israeli state, which is based on ethnic cleansing, which is similar to the United States in that it's a settler state that was founded by displacing and subjugating the indigenous people and then aligning itself with imperialism against the rest of the world. And one of its most aggressive components and the power which actually has, again, with the assistance of the United States, those nukes, nuclear warheads in Israel. And I should mention that one of the components that of U.S. foreign policy that changed at the time of the Kennedy assassination, that people should remember that the Kennedy administration didn't want to have another power have nuclear. They wanted to be able to control it. And the Israelis were creating a nuclear military force, which they have until this day. And Kennedy had told them to desist, and he had put forth a resolution in the United Nations. Maybe it wasn't a resolution, but a proposal that the United Nations should inspect the reactor at Dimona in Israel to make sure that they weren't producing nuclear weapons, which they were. And all of that changed when Kennedy was taken out. It was one of the dynamic things. And that brings us back again to the election, because all these elections are doubly illegitimate because they all are part of the sequence of events that changed the whole machinery of the government in the Kennedy assassination. We don't have legitimate elections anymore. We don't have a government of elected officials, no matter how corrupt and deceptive. What we have now is a CIA government centered in the spy agencies. So we no longer have that republic. And last week, I had proposed, and I'm going to repeat that I think people on the left should think of coming together and organizing an alternate election to present. Hello? An alternate
election. Yeah, we're still here.
Oh, yes. Okay, an alternate election to represent the rebuilding of a democratic republic. If we had an election that was free of imperialist corporate control, free of high finance, and an election that was based on raising the consciousness of the people over who the real enemy is. And as one famous European fighter had once said, I believe it's attributed to Karl Liebknecht, in revolutionary German after World War One, he's famous for saying that the enemy is at home. It's not ISIS. If we go for this again, that they have another way to sell us into fighting for their imperialist interests around the world. We have to go to fight ISIS now. Who knows who we'll have to go to fight next? They're talking about fighting Putin, perhaps. The enemy is at home, and that's who we have to begin to fight. And I believe that holding an alternate election would be a way of posing that raising of consciousness in a way that we can think in revolutionary terms, in a way that, according to the American traditions, it has the potential of creating a popular movement that will try to restore the United States as a real democratic republic, not as the fake one that we had under the electoral machinery.
Joel, thank you so much for that. But one of the things that Mary had said to me a long time ago is that she loved the program because she learned so much, and I've been trying to hold Mary so she could give us comments on what's happening and how she's thinking of it. So, Mary, are you there? Hello? Mary, are you there? Well, I guess not. And so I will continue with what we have been talking about. It's and to clean up, it's just about that time. And I remember being in Colorado with Ward Churchill when a television program came in and asked Russell Means and I if we would do an interview with them. And I said, of course. And Russell said he would do it. So they went out. They said, as soon as the break comes, come out and do this interview. And as they went to the, as we were on our way outside, Russell said to me, what are you going to say? And I said, what I'm going to ask is, how many World Trade Centers would it take to equal the pain and the suffering of one day of slavery? And, or let's break it down further. How many World Trade Centers would it take in terms of death and destruction to equal a half a day of slavery of women, women of color in America? And go further. How many deaths or World Trade Centers would it take to equal a half a day of the poison and the oppression and the destruction to children of color in America? And he said, are you really? I says, watch when we get to the cameras. And we see that nothing changes. And we see shortly, and I'm going to finish up with this, we see that our Secretary of State, the French president, has changed the name of ISIS. And ISIS, who calls themselves ISIS, they're going to say Daesh. And I says, here we come, Muhammad Ali. You know, but what's going to happen is, Muhammad Ali is going to stand again in the form of someone else to say, what's my name, fool? And we want to avoid that, so we're going to have to deal with our government. Eddie, are you there? Thanks again, folks, for tuning in. We have just run out of time.
Yes, hello. Thank you, Ralph. I just want to acknowledge everybody who's on the panel tonight. Thank you for this enlightenment that is necessary if our people are going to know who is on their side and who is against them. So we will end as we usually end with Nina Simone. And we'll give a shout-out to the brave students of the University of Missouri. Good night, everybody, and thank you. Thank you.
Say them loud, say them clear, for the whole.